it feels so nice when someone appreciates what you've done. And I was like, gosh, I do have 2 days off. You know, primary producers don't. I was like, I want them to feel the warmth from someone genuinely just appreciating what they've just had.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Many in hospitality dream of opening their own venue, free from the constraints of employers and the demands of guests as well, a pure representation of their approach to food and hospitality. The reality of such is often rarer than hen's teeth, but what if you could make it all come true? Eilish Maloney is the owner and chef of the What If Society. Eilish, how are you?
I'm so great. How are you, Anthony?
I'm good. It's really good to get you on the show. It's quite exciting watching from afar what you're up to. How are things at the moment?
Things are good. Things are a little hard. It's, you know, I've seen a lot of posts recently about the first quarter's done. I'm like, oh gosh, the first quarter. I feel like I'm both running out of time, but also have so many things that I'm getting done that it's, yeah, time's an interesting one for me at the moment. Yeah, I mean, what an opportunity to be able to talk on your podcast about what we do. Sometimes it feels like being in the Southern Highlands, we're just plodding along, you know, in our four walls, trying to change the world, and wondering if people notice what we're doing.
Well, it's a beautiful part of the world there.
Oh, it is. It is spectacular. Home for me. I was born and bred here. Ventured off for a couple of years when I got to 18 and thought this was the quietest town I've ever discovered, and I needed to spread my wings. But it's good to be back. Getting a little older, these are the sort of regions that, yeah, give me substance now. So, yeah, it's good to be home.
Mm. Tell us a little bit about the What If Society. What exactly are you doing there?
So the What If Society is basically built around a food-focused co-op. We work only within this region, and we channel everything sustainable and zero waste. So it does have a really big mantra on who we work with and why we work with them, and then, yeah, how far our food's travelled, working with nature instead of against it, and also working with everyone around us. You know, it's so much easier when you have a team, and that team, I believe, needs to be expanded outside of, you know, just the small What If team that I actually have that I pay and work for me every single day, you know, working with experts in their field to then bring a product or an ingredient through my doors. Like, the result is only ever going to be better. So we have a little studio in Mossvale, in the township of Mossvale, that we trade Wednesday to Sunday. And it's a little, honestly, it kind of feels like you're walking into our home. That's what I really wanted the feel to feel like, is you're a friend walking in, big, beautiful hellos. It's a very warm space. It's very open, little open kitchen. And we only have communal tables, 16 seats. And on the right-hand side, we have a beautiful sort of little providor, where all our baked goods, all of our pickles, preserves, everything. So you can come in, and be a bit of a one-stop shop, get sourdough, eggs, butter, meat, veggies, everything. And then on the left-hand side, you can, pop in the corner and sit down and, yeah, either have, you know, a coffee and something delicious, sweet wise, or we have a really cool little menu, and it's been a fun thing to transition, especially in this little region, to challenge people's you know, concept on food and their taste buds. So we have a 5-piece blind menu. we've just gone by sizes. So we have a small but mighty, meet me in the middle, a whole lot of love, and a just feed me. And people, you know, it really starts a conversation, which is what if is all about, is to actually dare to ask a question, to learn something new. And you know, we just never know the value of where a conversation can lead us to, and help us understand the root of a problem, or the exciting thing that we're about to eat, or, you know, whatever it is. And yeah, it's a really fun game. I'd say about 90% of our customers are more than willing and love it. And to see them just sit down and engage with who they're sitting with and the conversations that flow. And then when myself or my other chefs take it to the table and then tell the story, it's a really, really beautiful transaction. So that's been a really fun thing to roll out. Yeah.
That approach to sort of portion sizes is fascinating. It moves away from any idea of a tasting menu or a la carte menu, and everyone has their own sort of levels at which, or amounts that they want to eat. Where did the idea come from?
To be honest, it's actually a really funny story. The idea came from my barista and my other chef. We were just a team of three when we launched. Both wanted holidays at the same time, and I was like, well, I can't exactly say no because I could lose you. So, yep, you can absolutely go on holidays together, but I need to keep these doors open. And I was like, I need to be able to serve, do coffee, and cook all at the same time, basically, solo. And I was like, okay, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And I was like, done. I was like, I'm going to do one blind plate. We just called it Trust the Chef. And yeah, $20, just a dead even $20. And it gave me the freedom to, you know, pivot and change if I, you know, if I had a certain amount of portions on one thing and then something else. It just really gave me a lot of flexibility. And I actually kind of shot myself in the foot because it just went gangbusters. And well, I was so busy and I was like, oh my God, okay. But, you know, the customers that we have come through our doors just got it. And they were so accommodating with, I was there by myself. I was trying to do something really fun and exciting, but different. And the patience that came from again, them coming in, and there isn't this demand, there isn't this you know, ego or disrespect. It's just a really beautiful time spent in our space. And yeah, it went gangbusters. And I was like, well, we want to do more than just one plate of food a day. So when my team came back, I was like, guys, it went so well. People were coming in asking for it. Like, they were like, you're the space that does the blind menu. And we're like, we absolutely do. So we thought, let's make it a 5-piece menu. And people then can really, you know, choose based on the size, how hungry they are. So that was where, you know, it really came into play, really fun. I remember this story with this, like 25-year-old tradie that came in, and he was like, oh, have you got any burgers? And I was like, oh, sorry, mate. Like, no, it's any cans of Coke. And I was like, not really the establishment, but can you trust me? And I was like, I will give you your money back if you don't like it. But I have a feeling, yes, you'll be challenged if you knew what this was. You'll hear something in what I would tell you that will instantly turn you away from it. But I really have a strong feeling. You know, we don't serve wacky, uncomfortable, or you know, incredibly challenging food for the you know, the everyday consumer. But we do. Some people aren't gonna, when they hear the word chickpea, they're like, absolutely not, I don't want to eat a chickpea. But you know, if you can trust us and what we do, you know, when we're passionate and we're confident, we're really proud of putting a plate up, you know, it's going to end in a really, really fun and good result. And he was like, okay, well, you'll give me my money back. And I was like, absolutely. I was there by myself. So I cooked him this meal. I was like, just take a bite. And he was a bit nervous to take a bite in front of me. And he took a bite and he was like, what am I eating? And I was like, you're actually eating this wild mushroom that I've put in this batter. And he's like, what? And I was like, yeah, it's caraway seeds here. And he's like, I would never have ever eaten something like this in my life. He's like, this is so good. And now he's a regular and it was amazing.
Has this approach to portion sizing and the menu had an impact on your zero waste sort of ethos?
Oh, massively. yeah, you know, I often get asked what was one of the biggest challenges with the zero waste ethos. And it was like, you have to nearly predict how much waste you're going to have before having it, because you then need to try and prepare yourself on how you're processing it. Whether we have chickens and we have big static three-phase composting facilities at our second space. So there are things that we can't physically turn into a, you know, a byproduct. But yeah, you know, and for us, people, we eat more food than we genuinely need to. And it was really awesome to have these different sizes and also challenge people. A lot of people come in and they're like, well, what's got meat on it? And, you know, the only meat we actually serve is if we've broken it, like it's whole food, it's whole butchery. So I've got to then find the time to break down a whole cow and I have one hanging and it's amazing and it's so much fun when we do it, but it's a process because we do it all by hand. And they're huge. A lot of people thought, what the hell are you thinking? I was like, the cows, a quarter cow is taller than me. So carrying one is challenging. But, you know, then being able to serve a piece of protein and it be, you know, the kind of side part to, you know, the offering that we're offering, or it might be, you know, it's something I actually really learned at the Ledbury in London was, you know, you can dress a beautiful vegetable in a rich, you know, sauce, a beautiful piece of protein. It doesn't have to be this big steak or this beautiful big fillet of fish, you know, highlighting things differently. It's been amazing. And on the waste side, and to mention something with the blind menu, having the blind menu also eliminated people feeling like they were missing out. So working with waste and really trying to reduce it, you know, we only work with small scale farmers. So 1 week they may have four zucchinis and that's all they have. And it's like, well, you know, okay, we can't feed everyone that comes through our doors for a week with four zucchinis, but we can feed X amount. And then we pivot and we change the small but mighty plate. No one feels like they've missed out on something that was served, you know, yesterday, which is really fun because there's that instant, you know, negative reaction when people feel like they've just missed out, you know, I mean, we're all guilty of it. Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry. We've run out of the fish and chips for today. Or I'm so sorry. And then you're like, oh, I feel like that's exactly what I wanted.
Yes. We've all been there.
We've all been there.
It kind of sounds like the sort of model that should be a part of the food industry, but, you know, widely kind of isn't. What's the challenges that you face with this approach in regards to supply, in regards to delivery? Is it hard?
Yeah, really great question. And it's probably the thing that I'm reviewing right now. I've kind of got two hats on. And one is, how do you scale? How do you scale this? Because small scale farmers, we're working direct, you know, and they're working, they're trying to work with nature. And I mean, we're looking at the environment and we're looking at, you know, the seasons, and every season is different from the last. So, you know, seeing how much produce actually comes from each season is vastly different every single year. And trying to navigate that with the growers and take that pressure off and say, hey, you know, we see this. I don't want to demand that I can order 12 boxes of cauliflower and that's it. And that's my menu. And let's put it, you know, that was the real drive behind What If, was I can actually have a real positive change. If I challenge myself here, you know, I can be a really amazing chef with any ingredient in front of me. The challenge is, what can I do with the things that are only growing right in front of me? And some weeks, you know, it's amazing. And others, some have maybe bolted quickly, so they've had to harvest early, or, you know, the imperfects of produce. And how are we utilizing them to the utmost respect and to the greatest of their ability? whilst returning, you know, money back into our economy here in our region. The scale for me, one is definitely quantity. So, you know, you can pivot really easy and that's great, but you're then limited with the capabilities of a worker. And that's what we've found probably the hardest is this blind menu is amazing. And I absolutely love being there and being able to cook it and sort of come a weekend, I'm like, no one gets to know the menu, like not even my staff. I'm like, I've just got this incredible vegetable display right there on a bench in front of me and I just start cooking. And freestyle, and it's really, really exciting. But how do you hire somebody? You know, I'm facing that at the moment. How do I grow the business whilst I'm working so in the business? And, you know, you are limited to then who you can hire. And do they care as much? Like, do they genuinely look at a product and go, okay, we have carrot tops here, we have carrots, we're not going to peel the carrots, but we're going to use the tops to make a pesto or a chimichurri or whatever, and then we're going to use this whole carrot and we're going to make it delicious and nothing's going to be wasted. It does limit you to the capabilities of a staff member, which is hard, and you don't want to be so picky, but and I think that's why when you go into establishments and you see such repetitive things on menus, it's because it's an easier approach. And there's so many hard challenges coming up against us that, you know, I'm definitely guilty of it, being like, oh, I just don't want to think about this for a second because I've got all of these other things I'm thinking of. So, yeah, that's probably the hardest part is the capabilities of someone being able to match what you want to do.
I want to explore what you are doing and how it all came about in a little while, but take us back to when you were young. Whereabouts did you grow up and what sort of role did food play?
So I grew up in this region in the Southern Highlands, and it was funny. My parents are, come from both family farming backgrounds. My dad, dairy, and my mum, sheep and cattle. And I was on the dairy farm milking cows from 10 years of age. So definitely hands-on and a real inside, you know, feel and understanding of the hardships of it, you know, which was the first link to something's got to change and this just doesn't seem fair. The classic fair statement there. And then I didn't think I'd get into food. Like I'm not from this, you know, I don't have this romantic story of my nan would cook with me. She was great with sweets, but, you know, I just loved food. It wasn't until 15 when I was at school and I did food technology and as an elective and I did it and it just hit different. It just clicked, you know, and I was like, wow, this just seems to make a little more sense to me than anything I've ever done. And I was like, well, that makes sense to me. Why would I in my life challenge myself harder to work in a field that doesn't necessarily come maybe a little bit more naturally easy? So that was the first sort of light bulb moment. And then I was like, I can never understand every inch of food. And I love that, like this endless journey of discovery and growth. I was having a conversation with a bit of a life mentor yesterday, actually, and he said, if we're not learning, we're dying. Like, and it's so true. Like, if we aren't learning, we aren't inspired, we don't have these incredible positive pheromones going out there just excited for the lust of life. And I knew that food could link me to a never-ending journey of discovery and people. And for me, they were the two pots of gold for me. I really love connecting with people. And I knew that food could do that for me. So I left school and jumped straight into the industry.
Well, tell us about those first couple of years. Do you have any stories of what it was like and where you cut your teeth?
Yeah, so started again in a little local restaurant down here, a little Italian restaurant, and the sous chef at the time, 11 years older than me, a Kiwi female, it was amazing. We just hit it off. She was the most amazing mentor to the first period of my life, and I knew instantly that we were going to be really great friends, but I knew that there was going to be something bigger for us. And she is in the kitchen today whilst I'm here on the podcast. Yeah, I hit her up about 3 years ago and I said, mate, I couldn't do this without you. Like, I really visualize that this is something that we're meant to embark on together, and she jumped at the opportunity with me, and she's been my ride or die since. So it's been a real treat to be like, wow, you knew me when I was 17 as a little young apprentice, just green as anything, ready to go. And I remember one of my first hard lessons to learn was we were having a really big Saturday night service, and I was trying to do it all. You know, I was just in this mindset of run around and like, yes, chef, and I was getting it all on. And she pulled me up at the end of the night. She's like, Eilish, like I don't want to disregard how hard you work today and the effort you put in, but there's a reason why there's a team in a kitchen and you're not here to do it all yourself. Like, we're here to help each other out. And from that moment on, the way I've never communicated so well in a kitchen, like, we don't even have to talk. We just know, like, where we're moving. We can bounce around one another. And it's somewhat just, I mean, there's an ounce of magic in it. Like, it's, the way people often say it to us in a kitchen when they see us working, because our kitchens are open. They're like, oh, it's just amazing to watch you guys work, because it can be silent and you're just running around, just executing it flawlessly. And it's fun. Like, it's quite addictive when that happens. I know any chef would agree, like, when it's all on and it's all flowing, it is exciting. That was my first piece of my career. And then when I finished my apprenticeship, I was like, I want to go overseas. I want to work at one of the best restaurants in the world and just know what it's like to be at that level, to see what it takes. But I knew that I needed to go to Sydney and step out onto my own two feet a little bit, sort of controlled and safe first, only being an hour and a half away from mum and dad. So moved to the Big Smoke and was a part of the initial team at Nomad in Surry Hills. Yeah, so I went from a team of 4 chefs to a team of 17.
Yes.
Wild.
What was that like for you personally as well, sort of moving away from home, joining a bigger team, living in a bigger city?
I think a lot of people would probably describe me as somebody that just has a lot of guts. Like, I just believe that if you believe in yourself enough, actually pretty much anything is possible, and you're capable of it. You've just got to get past that nervous, vulnerable, second-guessing side. And, stepping into kitchen, she is still one of my dearest friends, Jackie Challenor. And I saw her recently, only a couple of months ago, and she was a sous chef at the time. Having someone like her in a kitchen, but so many others, like I was 18. Most of these chefs were between kind of 24 and 30. And it was so easy to, I think I got a little lucky to slide into a kitchen with such capable, very, very strong and independent and boisterous chefs, but very respectful at the same time. We were a team. It was exciting to see what the opening of an establishment looked like, and to go from, a 50-seater restaurant to a 180-seater restaurant, it was nuts. I wasn't quite ready for the hours, but they looked out for me. You know, it really became a family really quickly, and experiencing that staff meal just before service and the debriefings and the communication on a very different level, because it was such a big team, the seriousness behind it. Honestly, I just loved it. It was awesome.
Where did you go to from there?
So from there, I did, 18 months, and I just had a day where I was like, I'm ready. I booked a one-way ticket and I knew I wanted to go to London. So foolishly, I was like, one-way ticket, 3 months from now. Nathan Sassy was the head chef at the time, and I remember going to him and being like, give me a list. Give me a list of there's so many restaurants in London. I was like, give me a list of some that you personally think are really great. And I knew after Nomad that I wanted to be a team of 17 was kind of max for me. I was like, I don't want to really be in a team any bigger. I'd prefer a little smaller. I was like, I want to be a part of – I want to know that I leave my mark. I want to know that I can be noticed and understand things, not just be, you know, another number in a team. So I was really aware of the sized kitchens that I was kind of looking at in London. But the Ledbury was on there, number two, in Nathan's list. And I, of course, heard about the Ledbury, but I hadn't done too much research. And I'd done a trial at Restaurant Story. And it had an amazing trial, got the job, and I was like, oh, I've got a trial tomorrow at the Ledbury. I'll let you know. And I'm like, yeah, no worries. And I rock up at the Ledbury the next day, and I'm 152 centimeters, so I'm pretty short, but I have a pretty big personality. And I rock in, and there's just Aussie chefs everywhere, and I'm like, wow, okay, this is full on. Like, I feel pretty overwhelmed by this right now. And Brett just swoops in like he does, his charming self, and he was like, right, you can do a couple hours prep, but you basically then once service hits, you're just going to stand at the pass, and I'm going to talk to you about things, you're going to watch how service goes. And did a couple of hours prep, and then we got set for service, and it was so awkward to be this, you know, 19-year-old female, 152 centimeters in this male-dominant two Michelin-star restaurant, and Brett standing there at the pass, and everyone's constantly watching you and looking at you and watching every move, and he's just starting to feed me food. And I'm just like, this just feels so wrong. Like, these chefs are going down. They're sweating, they're tired, and I'm just getting fed. Like, and every single thing that I tried, Anthony, was just incredible. Like, I was like, nah, it felt like the moment when I watched Cirque du Soleil live once. I was like, it can't get better. Like, not every act can get better. And I was like, it is. It's getting better every single time. I was gobsmacked at everything I was tasting, and again, just the flow of it all. And Brett was there at the front running the energy of it. At the end of service, he sat me down and he's like, I know what it's like to move overseas by yourself at your age. And he's like, I want you to view me as a dad, like, you know, night or day, whatever you need, it's never going to be too big to ask. Like, and I was like, wow, like, I've known you for a couple of hours, and to offer that, like, genuine, like, safety net, I just knew. I was like, the only awkward thing that I needed to tell him was, I was like, I didn't think that I was going to get this job so easily. So I was like, I actually have like a 5-week holiday planned. And he's like, what? And I was like, I'm so sorry. I was like, I can cancel it. He's like, nope, go travel Europe, have the best time, because when you enter these doors as an employee of mine, you are going to work for it. And I was like, done. I'll see you in 5 weeks. And I did. Like, oh gosh, it was the most life-changing 2.5 years of my life. Yeah, 100%.
Take us into that kitchen. We've had numerous guests that have spent time, and also Brent's been on the show as well. Do you have any stories of kind of what you took from your time there?
Oh, the stories. I got to be careful what I say here. No kidding. It was, oh God, you know, the hours, I remember that my first week, it was back-to-back massive days. And I was like, what have I just walked into? Like, I feel like I'm superhuman, but I'm not superhuman because I'm barely keeping it together. Like, this is nuts. But the ability behind a team to, you know, to honestly carry people when they were having a bad day, or, you know, the high intensity, there was so much respect in that kitchen. And Brett was there from 7 a.m. in the morning running. You know, there was no job big or small. So watching our leader lead like that and never ask us to do something that we hadn't seen him do was really quite remarkable. But yeah, I think I was a little bit lucky that maybe I was a female in that kitchen for a while, because, you know, there was some tough, hard times. But I remember getting on the fish section, and we had these incredible spears of asparagus just come through from France, and some people were jumping on prepping fish. You were on the section by yourself, and everyone was jumping on peeling these asparagus, and we had this stagiaire in, and he was just taking not as much care. And, you know, you're running at such a fast pace that you do have oversights. You're kind of like, yep, everyone's just peeling. Like, I don't need to check these, you know, this work, but you had to. And Brett pulls us up and he's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And he's like, why are we treating this asparagus like this? And he's like, you know, an asparagus deserves just as much attention as the whole deer that is being, you know, butchered right next to you. There is no, you know, the importance. And that really stuck with me from, you know, from then till now, on just there, every single thing matters, you know. And I really love having that installed in me, you know, from down to the, you know, the importance of a window being clean, to a piece of asparagus being peeled so perfectly that when someone eats it, you know, it's we know the power behind, you know, a bite of something or a plate of food. Like, it genuinely transforms you back to a memory or a moment, or, you know, we know how it feels. It can make us feel really, really good. And I think, in a sense, life-changing. So to implement that in anything we do, the importance of just the time and respect and never devaluing anything, I think is one of the biggest things I took out of that kitchen, and the ability to pivot, that, you know, you could never say I don't have or I can't get this done. It's like, oh no, you can, we can, like, you know, you find a way. And I've definitely learned that in the last 3 years of business, is there's always going to be compromises. There's always going to be something that is compromised. So finding, you know, the smallest compromise in that situation, and running with that, because I think the word perfect probably shouldn't exist. Near perfect is great. But, you know, aiming to be the very best you can be is amazing. But you also can't, I think it's what makes this industry really, really hard, is you can't control everything. You actually, 50% of your day is unpredictable and can completely change in the matter of a few seconds. And whether that's, you know, something breaking or running out of gas, or, you know, a table's late, so then services, you know, changed, it's the ability to look at a situation and go, okay, it isn't what maybe we wanted or how we first visualized, but what are we going to do about it now?
What was it like for you coming back to Australia?
I didn't want to come home. I was pretty, yeah, I was like, oh, I was, my visa was up, and I did some amazing traveling and some amazing stages in some beautiful places in Europe. And I didn't really want to come home, but I was forced to, and I thought I would start sorting my visa out and go back, but I knew that would take time. So I hit up St. Peter I had finished the fish section at the Ledbury, and I knew that I had only really just opened the door to seafood and, you know, how to cook it. And I was like, I really want to – my mindset had sort of shifted a little in, I don't want to just go into a kitchen and work a section and move around sections and learn things within that realm. I want to hone in on a set of skills and really focus on that for 12 months. And then again, you know, 12 months later, hone in on a different set of skills, and fish made sense to me. It was the freshest thing on my mind. So I hit up Josh, and he had only, I started, my first day was the day that they just got awarded two hats and he got Chef of the Year. So it was a really great way to start, because everyone was in an amazing mood. and I was excited. I was like, seafood, like I can hone in on this for 12 months. I made it really clear to Josh that I only wanted to do 12 months, and I just wanted to feel like an apprentice again and just soak up every inch of knowledge I could. So I was a bit cheeky. I went into the kitchen, and again, a kitchen that was so over capable with staff. It was amazing. Like Jason White, who's now head chef of Bray, who was fired, or, you know, Alana Sapwell. There was the caliber of chefs was ridiculous. I felt like, even though I was coming from the library, I was like, I want to keep that pretty quiet. And they were like, I see you back from London. I was like, yeah, yeah. And they're like, where do you work? Oh, it's just a little place over there. Like, and they're like, where? And then Josh walks in. He's like, she worked at the library. I was like, no. Oh, yep, I did. And we don't need to draw on that, because I was nervous. I didn't want anyone to – I was nervous that I may not live up to an expectation of a skill set, you know, which was daunting. I didn't feel completely ready to, you know, you walk into a kitchen and there's a fair bit of confidence. There's a fair few egos and a bit of competitiveness. You know, you want to be able to hold your own. And I was a little nervous that the status of kitchens that I'd worked in would outweigh my ability, which was an interesting emotion to feel.
We've had Josh on the show a couple of times. Do you have any stories of what it's like to work with him?
I mean, he is just in an element of his own, really. Like, I never got to pick his mind as much as I really wish. The way he thinks about things, and again, one of those clever skills of just being across everything and knowing pretty much everything all at the same time. You know, a multi tasker at best. I wanted to be an apprentice, and I had really said that to him, but I quickly, about 2 months in, became, his head chef after Alana left. And I was pretty nervous. You know, I was the only female in the team, and again, that imposter syndrome of people, of me worrying that actually there was someone better suited in the kitchen. Quickly, Josh made it known that, you know, he chose me for a reason. And working with Josh and learning how to control nerves, you know, learning how to communicate to a team and control nerves, you know, when something might be going wrong, or and it's sort of out of your control, but in your control, how do you, again, control yourself where the second you let something get the better of you, especially with your emotions, everything gets harder. You get frazzled, and when you're a leader, you really can't, like, I mean, you're human, so you can feel these things, but at the same time, you usually have a brigade looking at you for the answer. And if you're losing your mind, well, then it's a sinking ship, really. And he really, really educated me on the compromises. You know, when you've got a team, there will usually always be somebody that isn't of the same caliber or same skill set and will need a push, and being able to do your job, which was, you know, I was the head chef prior to the butchery opening first. So we broke everything down in-house, being able to focus on breaking down the whole fish and getting your prep done, but also making sure that everyone was sticking to their times and everyone was going to be ready for service. And yeah, that multitasking across a team, it's an amazing skill set to have. And Josh, I mean, look at his empire now. I remember asking him a question when the fish butchery opened, and in the first initial, you know, parts of the fish butchery opened, it was a scramble. I mean, I think any venue opening, there's always scrambles because it's never smooth sailing. No matter how many times you wish it was, it's not. And I remember being like, oh, do you feel a bit rushed to have opened? And he's like, yeah, a little. And I'm like, why did you rush? And he's like, because someone else would have opened it. And I wanted to make sure that I was showcasing exactly how it should be done in the and executing it the way it needed to be executed. And I've really taken that on board within launching What If. You know, I definitely had, when I left St. Peter, there was a element to my mindset of, am I too young? Am I, you know, do I need more experience under my belt before I launch my own company? Like, this is really big. But I was really surprised that no one in the Highlands had opened something like What If, and no one in the Highlands was showcasing the food bowl that we were working with, the, you know, some of the best producers that feed so many of Sydney's best restaurants. Like, it really baffled me, and I was like, I will run out of time and someone else will do it and do it in a way that I think could be better. So I need to do it. Like, this is the Joshua Nyland moment where I'm like, this is my fish butchery and I need to open the doors now. I need to trust my gut and trust the universe. And it all just rolled into play, and it was amazing.
Tell us about that period of time, finding the site, creating the business. What were the challenges and sort of triumphs of that little period?
Yeah, so of course we opened in the peak of COVID, which was nuts, but the site came available the way it did, and you've got to just make a move on things when they're kind of standing in front of you. And I went out on it solo, and I was really cautious of, I don't want any debt. I don't want to, you know, I can't guarantee the success of What If. I have absolutely no idea. I can hope and I can believe that it's going to be remarkable and great, but I can't guarantee that. So, you know, what are my compromises and what are my safety nets? And so my first thought was, we grow within our means. So that did mean that my time was sacrificed. It was London hours again, really long days, you know, making sourdough and breaking down whole beasts and getting the product up, because it quite literally was kind of the two and a half, like there was two and a half of us. There was three of us, but one worker that we had, she's amazing. She was a lot of our graphic design, marketing, brand development. And I think the tricky period was, everything we did, the next thing complemented it. So it was like, well, if we're composting, why wouldn't we be compost? Like, why wouldn't we offer a composting system for other businesses and other people? Because the more people doing it, the better. But staffing was ridiculously hard. And, you know, when you're starting out and every week the money that you're making is just going straight back into the business, and, you know, you're working with pretty much domestic appliances to grow to get you commercial appliances, like, you know, you're working week to week on incomes. And it was so surprising though how quickly people just got it and people just welcomed it. My sister Jessica, who is works for the Department of Primary Industries and is our small-scale beef producer who produces our beef, has been a really big mentor for me in my life on the agricultural, you know, primary producer side. And her first thing before we launched, Anthony, was, I love your name, but it's also, it could be your biggest downfall because it doesn't tell anyone what it is straight away. And I was like, yeah, that's the point. And she's like, yeah, but how do you get people in the door? And I'm like, love a challenge. I was like, absolutely. How do we get people in the door? And she's like, you can't spend 10 minutes pitching to every single person, even if you want to. And I'm like, she's like, so you got to get your pitch nailed within, you know, a 30 second to a minute, just boom, statement. But I always wanted the brand to be never subject to one thing. I never wanted people to fully understand it. I wanted people to, from being like, well, what is what if? Great question. Now we're having a conversation. It starts that conversation, whether it's in a household or it's in our establishment or it's on the street because I've seen, you know, a beautiful little product that we have that it's tagged. Like, what is what if? Well, it's essentially whatever you want to make it within your life, you know, full circle living at its best. And what if we work, you know, with one another instead of against one another for all the what ifs in the world? It starts with food, but we're working with potters for our cups and our plates, and you know, we upcycle the most amazing. I'm very lucky. I have a father who's a builder, and we have the most amazing timber cabinetry all throughout our facilities. And, you know, that's hardwood, 100-year-old hardwood from a church that's been, you know, and it's really like thinking, you know, beyond just the product in front of us, or, you know, the possibilities really. And I'm like, wow, imagine creating a space where an artist of any kind gets rightfully appreciated and noticed all at the same time. You know, I had to move out of the city because I remember this one comment being made to me, and they were like, oh my God, this is the most amazing food. Like, thank you. And it was at St. Peter when I'd served a table, and I was like, wow, I feel like I've barely done anything to this. You know, like, realistically, I don't really feel like I'm deserving of just all that praise. And I was like, it feels so nice when someone appreciates what you've done. And I was like, gosh, I do have 2 days off. You know, primary producers don't. I was like, I want them to feel the warmth from someone genuinely just appreciating what they've just had. And, yeah, so it was really hard in the beginning of What If, because I was trying to tell the whole story and not have it be confusing, you know, there would be a post about a producer, then the next day there might be a post about food, and then there might be a post about, you know, a product. And a lot of people for our first year were like, oh my God, I didn't even know you did that. You know, oh, I didn't even know you did that. And it's like, yeah, I guess we do it all. So yeah, it was I was really surprised at how warmly welcomed we were received. And I actually think starting in COVID, where people really started reviewing and looking within themselves on what they were consuming and their health and their well-being, it nearly helped us. It nearly kind of helped, succeed straight off the bat, because people were caring about what they were putting in their body and they wanted to know where their food came from, and we were that source.
Mm. Well, what are some of the producers in your region that you've connected with? Just a couple of them that you could tell us about.
Yeah, so we have an amazing – well, we have our beef, which is from my brother-in-law and sister. We have Tathra Place. They're incredible. I went and saw Luke recently, and, I mean, very passionate and just remarkable at the proof in the pudding of how he's farming and how he's getting it done, you know, down to pigs, ducks, sheep. He's working with Charlie Arnott with the lamb, chickens, like, and the whole, again, like, it's the whole process. It's not just, well, we're farming, we're farming this and we're caring about what the end product looks like. It's like, well, no, what's happening to the land? This is the land that we own, that if we protect and look after, you know, there's value. So working with Luke's been incredible. We have amazing pasture-raised eggs down here. There's Pecora Dairy, which are sheep milk producers, so they make incredible cheese. Very, very lucky to have them down here. And then we have a very good friends with Moonacres. They've been leading the way in our region for organic vegetables for a really long time now. And they've got some beautiful establishments themselves. Phil, you know, the owner, his story is amazing. He was once in finance and now he earns $30 an hour to pick vegetables and he loves it. And I mean, we need people like Phil to genuinely to change the world. Who else? I mean, the other thing that we have, which is really, really fun, is we tried to really bring the mindset back to, you know, our ancestors, where when there was an abundance of something, money doesn't always have to come into it. We would trade something of excess from us to somebody else. So we have a really beautiful local community that bring in their own homegrown stuff. They know that we don't work with chemicals. And honestly, some of them have given me more tomatoes than the producers have. And I'm like, whoa, guys. And it's amazing. You know, we swap a loaf of sourdough, or, you know, they might come in and they're like, oh, can we just have a meal? And it's like, absolutely. Like it is my favorite way of a transaction, you know, rid the money and let's swap food, or you've got something that I need and I've got something you need. Like there's nothing better, I feel. So yeah, that's a lot of fun.
Well, you're changing the world in your own little world there at the moment in the Southern Highlands. But what sort of plans do you have now that you've built this incredible foundation?
Oh, look, big dream plans. As a big dreamer I am, I would love to see the What If Society be certainly a nation-wide recognized institution. You know, without it sounding controllive or weird, I really want to create a new society. I really want to create a society that's considerate and compassionate and understands and cares. And, you know, I really love when people ask me, or that, you know, they're on holidays and they're like, oh, we got some honey, you know, would you deliver to Queensland? I'm like, no. I'm like, guys, the idea is, what if you find your closest bee producer in Queensland? Like, you know, live the what if way wherever you live, and be connected to, you know, we have members, we have 65 members within our society. And when we put on events and soirees and we bring people together, it's so amazing to see them all connect because they've all got things in common. And to see a community know one another, I think we really lost that within COVID. People retreated in a really big way, and to see people come into our store and the hugs are ridiculous. Like sometimes I'm like, guys, come on, can someone order? Like, what's going on here? Because people are hugging and we know each other by name, and you know, our local community is our bread and butter, and our, you know, tourism is just the cream on top. And I genuinely trust that if I was in any hardship, the amount of customers that would genuinely show up and be there to support, whether it's physically or emotionally, whatever it is, or financially, have my back. It's a really powerful thing to feel, and the support of many. So, yeah, I would love to believe that one day we are a global recognized society where no matter where you live in the world, you're connected to a really great institution that cares and starts conversations. And, you know, at the moment we talk about zero waste and food and where it comes from, you know, the endless opportunities of how we power out, how we source our electricity and how we from genuinely the plates we eat off and our cutlery and the tables, like it all deserves a story. It all has a face behind it, and that's kind of my principle and purpose, is to tell it and to find it.
Well, it's absolutely extraordinary what you're doing, and you're having such an amazing impact on other people. But what is it that you love about what you're doing?
Oh, it would 100%, and I don't get to do it enough, it would 100% be the human interaction, learning someone's story. And yeah, you know, I have a tattoo on my arm that says, "Be the change you want to see in the world." And I've been very lucky to travel all over the world, and I hit a point where I was like, I am so privileged, and I would be such a fool to not do something great with that privilege. And for me, it was to have purpose, to have a purpose-driven life where, you know, I can inspire and connect with people. We all crave human connection, you know, whether it's someone walking in for a coffee or they're sitting down to join, spend money and join our society. I just want to know your story. And if I can bring a bit of happiness to your life and get paid doing it, amazing, amazing. If I can live my life through, yeah, really great conversation and human connection, I absolutely would. So, yeah, I hope that I can personally set this business up to have more chefs come through the doors, you know, challenging their creativity and cooking. And I'd really love to enter schools, to be honest, Anthony, and talk to kids and help them not only see the power behind food and the environment and sustainability and zero waste, but honestly just the power of belief and believing that they could be part of a positive change and do something really actually really great with their life and not kind of just settle or give up. So yeah, for me it's about that feel good you know, dopamine knock-on effect of yeah, having as many great days with as many great people as I can.
Well, Eilish, what an absolute joy and honour to have you on Deep in the Weeds today to hear just a little bit of your story. I know there's going to be much more to it, so please keep in touch and we'll have to catch up again soon.
Yeah, will do. Thank you for this opportunity. Really appreciate it.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Stay tuned as we take a deep dive into the lives of the incredible people who ply their trade in the food and hospitality sector. Special thanks to executive producer Rob Locke for making this all happen. Follow us on Instagram at Deep in the Weeds Podcast or email us at podcast@deepintheweeds.com.au. Stay safe and be well.